the Rise Up See Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast. I'm your host, Jess Root from CardsWire.com. And the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web here for another one of the 14 opponent preview shows that we're doing, which have been thus far, and kind of the goal is to release 14 shows in 14 days leading up to when Seth and I can preview training camp and do an NFC West ranking show. And so again, like I mentioned the other shows, I'm not numbering this episode during the episode because I don't know in which order I'm going to release them. But on the line with me for this opponent is Matt Urban, the managing editor over at the Falcons Wire, who was a guest on the show last year. Funny story, neither one of us remembered that the Cardinals and Falcons played last year. It was that unmemorable. And then when we looked at the player, oh, yeah, I remember that game. But the funny story is, like, as bad as the end of the season went for both teams last year, that game was completely forgettable, isn't it, Matt? Well, how are you doing, by the way? Thanks for coming back on the show this year.
Oh, great, man. Thanks for having me on, dude. Yeah, that was definitely a forgettable one, though. It took me a minute to recall that one for sure. I don't know what happened there.
So, you know, when we talked last year, expectations were low for the Falcons. And I thought that they could perform. I think they could outperform expectations, at least from the betting perspective. And they ended up doing that, but they did it in a weird way. They lost really, really, really close games. They had a really good run game. And then Marcus Mariota quits the team. What in the world? What in the world happened with Marcus Mariota?
You know, it's funny. I was just actually watching the Netflix quarterbacking show, which is it covers his last season, along with Mahomes and Cousins. But honestly, yeah, I don't know. He fans were calling for him to be benched for weeks, and then like Arthur Smith did bench him, and then he also said he had a knee injury, and then he also had a kid like that same week. Okay. So it was kind of a lot of stuff going on. They didn't really have a one clear story of what happened. It sounds like he just got benched and he kind of got upset though and left the team because he never returned in any of the rating games last year. So it's just Desmond Ridder from that point on.
Yeah, and that made sense. But he knew that was they drafted Desmond Ridder.
Right, exactly.
Like he had to know that was coming. And while, you know, going back to the draft with Mariota, like, one of the reasons why he didn't attend the draft is that he wanted to be around family in Hawaii. So, okay, maybe some of that's true, but that's still weird. That's still weird. And I remember, you know, this offseason when, as we were looking at potential backup quarterback situation, people were suggesting Marcus Mariota, and we're like, he literally just quit on a team. Why would anyone... Though we did like to make the joke. I like to make the joke. Well, that he's perfect. So he's going to start for the first few weeks of the year. And then when Kyler Murray comes back, he can just quit. And then we don't have to worry about it anymore.
Right, exactly. Yeah. I don't know, man. Mariota, you know, I had kind of high hopes for him. I thought, you know, him reuniting with Arthur Smith, maybe they would, you know, recapture some of that magic. But, you know, it's funny because Smith kept talking about, you know, how resilient he is and all this stuff. And then he ends up, you know, benching him and he just checks out. So obviously that was, he wasn't going to come back.
Statistically, he wasn't terrible.
No, he wasn't bad. It was more like accuracy issues in big moments, you know, like third downs and just like some of the most questionable decisions I've ever seen. I don't know if you saw that gif of him like throwing the ball upside down, basically. Like he, I don't know what was going on in that game. It was Thursday night game against the Panthers. But yeah, he had some rough moments, but overall his numbers were solid enough to, I mean, at least be like a, you know, quality backup or something. But yeah, just it was definitely time to move on and go with Ridder, I think, after what he had shown for the first whatever 12 games it was.
So they end up going 7-10, winning the final two games of the year to get to 6-7 wins. One of them beating the Cardinals in week 17, right. Desmond Ridder versus David Blau. It was a very forgettable performance. But what were sort of the high points of the season? We can look at one. Oh my gosh, that rushing attack! But what were the highlights of a season that was like? Would you say that it was disappointing, or did it? Was it roughly what people expected, or maybe even a little bit better?
I think it was people were probably a little bit disappointed I think I was, it was about what I was expecting though. I mean, you know, they last year, like you said, like the running game got going pretty well. Passing game was, you know, probably took a step back from Matt Ryan, but you know, there was a couple of young players that showed some good development, like safety Richie Grant, a couple other guys, they're young, they're rookies, Evan Ketty, Trey Anderson. But yeah, from besides that though, I mean, it really wasn't a whole lot to really look forward to with beyond the running game and stuff like that.
What were the most disappointing parts of the year in terms of player performances, team performance, stuff like that?
I'd probably say the secondary. You know, A.J. Terrell definitely took a step back last year. They signed Casey Hayward last year, too, and he kind of was a bust, and he got hurt. And other than that, you know, offensively, I think we thought the passing game would be a little bit more effective than it was. Didn't have great wideouts, obviously. They had Drake London, a rookie, and then their number two guy last year was, like, Damir Bird or –
Damir Bird, a guy that we remember from 2019 for the Cardinals. If he's a significant contributor, you know you're not a good team.
Exactly. And yeah, Kyle Pitts kind of had you know, back a little bit of a bad year. He ended up turning his MCL like week 11 or 12, but before that, he really wasn't doing anything. A lot of people blame Mariota for that because he just didn't seem to be able to connect with him for whatever reason. You know, his accuracy was just not there. Pitts is such a big target; people were like, "How can you not hit this guy?" But you know. It was a bad year for Pitts, and I would say Mariota too, definitely.
Yeah. How would you say, like, Drake London's numbers were solid, 72 catches, 866 yards, 4 touchdowns in a anemic passing game for the – but was that what was expected out of him in year one?
Yeah, honestly, I was impressed with London. You know, he – just because how little they passed the ball and, you know, with Ridder and Mariota – at quarterback, he just didn't expect much to him, but from him. But he definitely, like, he seemed like a clear number one to me. He showed all the, you know, traits of, I think, of a number one receiver. He's a big body guy, makes tough catches, contested catches. And, you know, he stepped in right away from week one. He started off the season pretty hot, and then he, you know, slowed down. But, yeah, I think he looks like a solid player going forward for sure.
Did you expect, how surprised were you at Tyler Allgeier's production as a rookie? I admit... being that I follow BYU football some, I knew about Allgeier, and I liked him as a potential guy who could be better than expected, but I didn't expect that out of him as a rookie.
No, I did not as a rookie, for sure. You know, I thought, you know, Arthur Smith is the kind of guy that would know how to utilize a guy like that, and you know, I thought that would be long-term, it would be a good fit. But, and, you know, looking at last year, too, he was inactive for week one, so it didn't seem like he was going to all of a sudden emerge as their starting back, basically. But, yeah, he kind of, you know, slowly came along, and then midway through the year, he just was just bowling over guys, man. He was just running through people. And, yeah, ended up going over 1,000 yards, which is crazy, because he wasn't even the starter for most of the year.
Right. But, I mean, for running back, the only 3 touchdowns, that's kind of a bummer. But still, Cordero Patterson, almost 700 yards. What a turnaround of the career that he had, because, like, dynamic return of one of the best we've ever seen, especially in this generation. Very pedestrian receiver. Get moved to running back, and suddenly he is super productive. And he had another.
Yeah, at age 30, too.
Yeah, 695 yards, 8 touchdowns, averaging nearly 5 yards a carry. You can do a few things in the passing game with him. But yeah, it's, and basically, like, you get 1,000 yards out of Allgeier, you got almost 700 out of Patterson. You get over 400 rushing yards from Marcus Mariota, and then another 360 from Caleb Huntley. It was just like it was just production upon production in the run game, which was, I mean, were we 1996?
Yeah, honestly, it's funny. And they even had another guy. He got hurt this year already in camp and OTAs. But Avery Williams, he had like 5 yards per carry and 100 yards. Like everybody they gave the ball to last year was just running all over the place. So. I don't know. Arthur Smith definitely knows how to run the ball, but it was just, yeah, you know, last year it was like they definitely had this great ground game, but they couldn't seem to maximize on play action, which you would think would be open with guys like Pitts and London on the outside when you're running that ball that effectively, you know. So, but yeah, definitely a solid point going forward is that running game.
And you would you say, did you see enough from Desmond Ridder as a rookie to think that he can be the guy moving forward? Because I know going into the draft, there was a lot of speculation that they might be in the market for a quarterback.
Yeah.
Do you think that they believe in what they've seen from Ridder?
I think they have to, honestly. I mean, I personally wasn't there. You know, I like what I saw from him. I'm not ready to say he's going to be really good or anything, I think he'd be like a game manager or whatever. But I think, you know, Arthur Smith must believe in him because it's his third year and he hasn't had a winning season yet. So, I mean, you know, he had a chance to go out and get Lamar Jackson or trade up in the draft and get somebody. But, you know, now he's going with Ritter. A lot of pressure on that. But, I mean, he must buy into what he sees in practice, you know. But, yeah, in terms of how he played on the field last year, I mean, he was just okay. He wasn't great. He wasn't terrible. To say that he's going to be really good this year would just be hopeful, I feel like. But in the same way, I think he can be a game manager. And if they run the ball as well as they're going to, I mean, it shouldn't be that hard for him. I mean, he's got a year in the system now. Comes into the offseason as a starter, and unlike last year. So I think there's a reason to believe he could be a lot better this year. But, you know, I haven't seen a ton yet. But
coming up next on the Rise Up Sea Red Podcast, Mr. Cardinals talk on the web. Let's move on to the offseason, what the Falcons did in free agency and in the draft. That's coming up next on the Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red Podcast, Mr. Cardinals talk on the web. As we look ahead to the offseason, who were the key losses that they suffered in free agency? And then what are the important moves that they made to improve? Like, we can kind of look at some of these, but in your opinion, who were the most important losses they suffered, if any?
Yeah, honestly, they didn't lose a ton of people, but I would say most important probably Isaiah Oliver, Demir Bird, as we talked about, Rashawn Evans, the linebacker, who's still a free agent, by the way, which is kind of odd. He was their leading tackler last year, I believe. Isaiah Oliver went to the 49ers. He was their slot corner. He was the only one that really played a major role. It's not going to be around. They had so much free agent money this year that they really didn't lose that many people, and they added tons. So unlike previous years, they've had, like, no money, and they just had to get, like, one or two guys. But, so they didn't lose anybody major, I wouldn't say.
What can you tell us about Cardinals fans about Elijah Wilkinson, who signed this offseason? He can play some guard, play some tackle, and it looks like he might be the leader to be their starting left guard this year.
You know what? I think he's a decent player. I was kind of surprised they didn't bring him back here because he would have been cheap, and they don't clearly have a left guard right now still. They drafted a guy in the second round, but he was a tackle. They're going to convert him over to left guard. I think Wilkinson, you know, he's not a great player, but he's a decent starter. You can put him in there. You can count on him. He wasn't like a weakness on the offensive line last year, I don't think. I thought that was a good signing. We kind of took your guys, Josh Myles, didn't we?
Yes. Myles, that's been interesting to see where it goes because he raw player, got hurt. In fact, had a scary life-changing moment when they found, like, I think there was a tumor of some sort that he had removed. And then he ended up coming back and then hurting his knee, injuring his knee, which has landed on injured reserve. But it was kind of a miraculous type. One of the, you know, the fact that the NFL is always checking medically their players and things like that. But
right.
But we go to free agency. I guess they really tried to remake their secondary, right? They go out and trade. They acquire Jesse Bates. They trade for Jeff Okuda, former number one pick of the Lions. And what else? So, like, who were additions? Trey Flowers, they had added.
Yeah, Trey Flowers were on him too, secondary-wise. Also, they grabbed Mike Hughes from the Lions. And they drafted Clark Phillips too in the fourth round. So, yeah, they added a bunch of guys in the secondary this year. So what was your question, though?
Basically, who are the key additions that they added?
Oh yeah, so yeah, obviously Bates is the big one. Obviously, they gave him 4 years at $64 million, and he should be a big impact player for the secondary. After that, they got David Onyemata from the Saints, who followed Ryan Nielsen over from the Saints, and Caden Ellis as well. Those are both both guys should probably start this year, I'd say. And then they grabbed Calais Campbell as well for a 1 year deal. Bud Dupree, I'm trying to think of who else.
How much do you think that Calais and Dupree have left in the tank?
You know, that's a great question. I don't know. I was arguing with one of my former contributors about this. I feel like Calais will be a starter, but, you know, not, you know, just be a maybe like half the snaps kind of guy. But yeah, other than that, I mean, the free agency additions, they should be really huge for this team because they've, like I said, they haven't had money in years to add anybody. So, I mean, like, the fact that they added, like, every layer of the defense and offense, like, they added somebody. Offense, they signed a couple guys too. They signed Matt Collins, the wide receiver. They signed Scotty Miller, former Bucks guy, and they traded for Jonnu Smith from the Patriots, the tight end. So I think that's going to be good for Arthur Smith because he likes those two tight end sets.
Yeah, that should be like the complement of Jonnu Smith and Kyle Pitts. You've got one that's more of the traditional big blocker who can catch. Jonnu Smith definitely can catch.
Sure.
But he's your more traditional tight end to be opposite Pitts, who does obviously more in the passing game. What was I looking at? Taylor Heinicke, where's he going to, like, is there going to be, like, Heinicke's one of those weird guys. Is Ridder going to be clear number one with Heinicke competing perhaps to be there?
I think they're trying to make it, you know, as clear as possible that Ridder is the guy. But, I mean, I don't feel like they would give Heinicke that money if they weren't, you know, kind of hedging their bet a little bit. I think, I think Heinicke is interesting too. I've watched him. I've kind of been fascinated by him. He's every time I see him, he seems to play pretty well. He beat us. I think he beat the Falcons twice in the past 3 years or something like that. So
Heinicke is one of those scrappy guys that's hard to get rid of.
For sure. I mean,
but
like,
you don't want him as your, you don't really don't want him as your starter starter.
Absolutely. Right, for sure. As a backup though, yeah, I feel like he's a good backup for sure. And he seems to come in here with the mentality that, you know, he knows this is Raiders team. But I mean, if, you know, Ridder struggles, which he could, I mean, we haven't seen him do anything. So if he does struggle early on, it's a pretty quality backup to throw in there.
And we move on to the draft. Were you surprised when they go, or is this Arthur Smith seeing Derrick Henry and the Titans? And so he goes out that they already have a strong running game. They've got Tyler Allgeier, the Patterson, what they did last year. You've got Huntley, and basically your stable of runners. And then they go add the big guy. Bijan Robinson, varying levels as to how special a player he is, but obviously the very best running back in this draft. By the way, an Arizona high school kid that we know about who played both ways, a pretty good in both ways. How surprising was it to see them go with a running back in top 10?
I personally was shocked, man. Like you said, I mean, for a team that didn't have that need at all and had other needs, that, you know, I really thought they would go, you know, defensive end, cornerback, anything. But I can understand what they're doing. If they're, you know, they're buying into Ridder, so they're going to try to take as much pressure off him as possible. You got a guy like Robinson, you know, you got all the other backs back there. Like Cordell Patterson, like you said, he can play a little bit of receiver. You got the two tight end sets. I think they're just going to try to make, you know, pound the rock and just, you know, set up play action. But yeah, I was definitely shocked to see them take Robinson. I mean, not just because he was in the top 10, but, you know, for a team like just didn't have the need, like I said.
Right. So the Atlanta Titans is what it sounds like.
Exactly, man. Yeah, you know, Jonnu Smith, by the way, a former Titan, also, he knows Robinson as well.
You've got, I don't know, like, and it could, and honestly, it could work if you get that defense, playing strong.
For sure.
Like when Ryan Tannehill can be a different, like, you can run a really good offense with Ryan Tannehill at quarterback because you've got, you know, Derrick Henry and the two tight end sets there. Definitely could probably replicate that with Ridder is competent. And that's where the thing, Ryan Tannehill was a little bit more than competent. He's pretty decent. He's pretty decent.
He had a couple good years. I think he had a couple good years before he got to the Titans. And I know he was eventually benched or whatever, but yeah, like you said, though, he was never really a top 10 guy. And I don't really want to say he was MVP candidate, but he had pretty good numbers for a couple of years with Arthur Smith there calling the plays. So
yeah,
I understand that Smith thinks he can kind of mold probably Ridder into, you know, something along those lines. But yeah, I mean, definitely got to lean on the running game for sure.
The rest of the draft goes like this: round two, Matthew Bergeron out of Syracuse, Zach Harrison out of Ohio State, Clark Phillips, cornerback out of Utah, DeMarco Helms, out of safety out of Alabama, and Jovan Gwynn, guard out of South Carolina. Of those guys, who are the ones that outside, we expect Bijan Robinson to be a big part of the offense. Who are the guys that are going to make decent contributions in year one? Who are going to be bit contributors, and who are for the future?
That's a good question. I would say definitely Bergeron, like we just talked about with the Elijah Wilkinson. He's penciled to be the starting left guard, even though he was a tackle in college. So I feel like he's going to have a big role this year because they don't really have another option at left guard to go with. So he's going to be out there probably. As for Zach Harrison, I don't know. That's a are you there? Sorry, Harrison?
Yeah.
Sorry, my dog's going crazy over here. Harrison, though, I'm not sure what his role is going to be. I mean, they got a lot of players at defensive end, edge position. Hart Phillips, I think, is going to get some playing time. He was kind of a guy that I think people felt was like a second, third round value. They got him in the fourth. You know, he's a good slot, versatile guy that can play safety, corner, and all that. So I like him to get some playing time. Other than that, though, I mean, I think the Falcons this year kind of took more of a free agency approach. You know, they hit most of their needs in free agency, and they just that allowed them to draft like Bijan and, you know, just take the best player available. And it, so yeah, I think we're going to see a lot of Bijan, a lot of Bergeron this year.
Is that strategy because of an NFC South that looks highly mediocre across the board, with the Saints and the Bucks might be terrible. The Saints are the Panthers are improving, but I mean, what are you going to say about them? And so they went out. The Falcons went out and did the opposite of what the Cardinals did. The Cardinals did went young, right. And the Falcons added veteran leadership, proven, like probably back end of a career, but ideally it kind of feels like they want to add consistent production with guys who can lead the younger guys to the next step, to instead of being a 7-win team, to contend for the division in a division that is not expected to be super good.
Right. Yeah, and I think it also comes down to Arthur Smith being in his third year. Not that there feels like there's a lot of pressure on him for a guy that hasn't won, you know, had a winning season yet. But yeah, I feel like he knows they got to try to win this year. There's just no excuse not to at least compete in that division. I mean, you got Bryce Young at quarterback. You got Derek Carr coming over from the Raiders. I mean, he might still be good, but
Baker Mayfield. You know,
Baker Mayfield, yeah. And is he even the guy? Even I don't even know if he's officially started, but yeah.
Who knows?
But I mean, either way, it's not a good situation there in Tampa. And, I mean, honestly, they should have won the division last year. They just didn't have the quarterback play, I think, to close the deal. You know, in the a lot of those mid-year games, they just kind of blew close ones. But yeah, I think they're just thinking we're going to spend everything we got. We're going to get to the playoffs this year. We're going to go with Ritter, just build everything we can, give them as much help as possible. And defensively, like I said, I think they should be a lot better. I mean, I really think Ryan Nielsen, the guy they brought over from the Saints, he's kind of got a reputation for, you know, coaching up defensive line, getting it, you know, maximizing sacks. And the Falcons have been, like, the least amount of sacks in the NFL for the past, like, few years, I believe. So I think that'll be a big help this year.
Coming up next on the Rest of Tier podcast, Bizarre Cardinals talking about, let's look ahead to the 2023 season. And discuss what the expectations outlook for the Atlanta Falcons. That's coming up next on Rise of C-Red. We're back on the Rise of C-Red podcast, Best of Cardinals Talk on the web. Reasonable expectations. So we were kind of discussed that just a moment ago, but do the Falcons have a goal of playoffs winning the division? Is that ultimately what their goal is? I mean, everyone has a goal of winning the Super Bowl, but like
right.
their ultimate goal this year, kind of what people are eyeing is, win this division, get to the postseason.
Yeah, I think so. I think the owner, Arthur Blank, even came out and kind of said, like, you know, this is the year I expect them to take that big leap because, you know, he tends to be, like, overly patient. You know, with Dan Quinn, for example, he kept him probably 2 years after fans were ready to move on. So I think, you know, it's important that he said that because I was kind of wondering why there was just so little heat on Arthur Smith, even though, you know, they weren't expected to do much, but yeah, like any coach, 2 years in the league without a winning record, you know, that tends to be, it tends to create a hot seat. And
for real?
I feel like, yeah, I think that Blank he doesn't really say things like that. He did come out a few months ago and say, like, he expects the team to take a leap forward this year. So, I mean, I think they're definitely looking at it that way. We'll see if they can do it, obviously. But
how high do you think their ceiling is if everything goes right? How many wins can they get? And can they make a run in the postseason? If they make it,
no, that's a great question, and it really comes down to Ritter. I think, you know, if he is just competent and maybe makes some plays here and there, I think, you know, this is probably a 10-win team, just because of the schedule too. They have the easiest schedule in the NFL this year in terms of last year's record or whatever. So yeah, I think it's feasible they could get the 10-11 win mark at best. I don't see them doing much after that. Maybe they could win a wild card game if they could host it at home, winning the NFC South. But yeah, I think that would be a big step forward this year anyway. They could at least, you know, get to the playoffs, maybe win a playoff game, be great, but I can't see much beyond that, I guess.
And if the barring injury, I don't like to play the injury card, but if it's right. Just underperformance, what do you think this team's floor is? I like to look at a team's low end and high right. end, and then kind of what's kind of reasonable. So reasonable, I'm guessing, is winning the division, however that comes. Maybe it's 9, maybe it's 10 wins.
Right.
And it sounds like kind of what reasonable expectations are kind of the ceiling. I haven't heard that from a team. Like their ceiling is what their reasonable expectations are. And I guess that's just more the division. But what do you think that the floor is barring injury?
You know, I feel like they're probably 5-7 wins. You know, if things really go bad and they got to switch from Ritter, just because the schedule in general, I mean, they got some pretty easy games. And early on the year, it's pretty easy to start off. But they're kind of tough. I mean, I could almost see them just being 7-10 again, like last year. You know, I mean, they could easily happen. They've so many close games, and I don't feel like they tend to be maybe not quite as aggressive at the end of games as, you know, I feel like they should be sometimes. And that makes me wonder, you know, how far they could go potentially this year with Ritter. But yeah, I mean, I'd say about low end, probably up 5 or 6 wins.
And if you look, so the Cardinals will face the Falcons at home in week 10 on Veteran Day weekend. How do the Falcons fans view the Cardinals game? Obviously, the Falcons are not considered a great team right now, and the Cardinals are considered a terrible team. How do if people or fans are making predictions for the Falcons and looking at that game, is that kind of an expected win, a hopeful win, or kind of a toss up?
I think fans are looking at it like an expected win. You know, that tends to be how it is anyway. I'm sure your fan base is looking at that game like it's an expected win too.
Well, no. I don't think any of our fans this year are saying that any game is an expected win. But we do. I personally view the Falcons game as a winnable game. It's one of the, like, you look at the schedule based on what we know in the talent, but that's one of the winnable games on the schedule.
Right, for sure. I think that fans look at it that way, though. I mean, just because seems to be so much uncertainty around Arizona this year. I mean, you got Cardinal, Kyler Stills. Kyler going to miss any part of the year?
He is targeting week one. I don't think there's a chance in the world he's going to, because that would put week one would be 8 months since surgery, and that's just not feasible. Now, I think he'll be back on the field, but well before week 10. I think quietly the window that they're eyeing is weeks 5 to 8, and personally think it'll be about week 6. Because that'll put him just past the 9-month recovery, which is fast but reasonable. 8 months is stupid.
Yeah.
But Nick, I would expect I expect him to be not just back, but kind of have gotten the rust off by the time week 10 rolls around.
Right. Yeah, I wasn't sure what to think of Kyler Murray this year. I mean, it almost seems like they're trying to move on with him. If you read the tea leaves, it seems like. Do you feel like he's in their long-term future still at this point? Or?
Those are the plans. Anyone talking about Caleb Williams and Drake May are just trying to be ahead of the curve if things go poorly. The organization is all in on Kyler Murray. That said, they've set themselves up in a position where they could move on, but that's definitely not the plans. They believe in Kyler Murray. Jonathan Gannon has said multiple times if it weren't for Kyler Murray, he wouldn't have taken that job. And well, let's be honest, like, even if he doesn't come back completely what he did, like, we've seen Kyler Murray play at an MVP level for a short stretch in 2020, half the season in 2021. So you know what the ceiling is. So if he doesn't even hit that ceiling, you've still got a pretty good quarterback. Now, last year was a crap show for a lot of reasons. But, you know, with the talent he has, it would be tough to move on. It was like moving on from Josh Rosen to draft Kyler Murray. Oh, yeah.
Right, yeah.
That was not a difficult thing to do. And even then, fans were like, yeah, you really want to do that? But moving on from Kyler Murray to, say, a Caleb Williams, unless Kyler comes back and is like RG3 post-injury, I think you've got to roll with him, right?
I honestly agree. I thought last year, I mean, I think I talked to you about it last year, like, the national perception around Murray seems to be so much lower than what we've seen him do on the field. So, I mean, like, I understand right now why it's so low. Obviously, two kind of dud years and, you know, bad ending last year and the coaching change and all that. But, I mean, yeah, his upside is, you know, top five in the NFL, in my opinion. I mean, if he's healthy and he's got his legs working and, you know, he's going to throw the ball better than people give him credit for. I'm kind of a pretty big Kyler Murray fan. I watched his first game against the Lions, that tie way back, and I was pretty impressed just for him being a rookie.
That game was crazy because it was so bad to, hey, I'm just going to make things happen, and then the tie. Then the stupid tie.
Yeah, I know, right? But yeah, I think they shouldn't rush him back. Obviously, like you said, there's no reason for the really them to rush him back. And as long as he does and comes back healthy, I think he could, you know, get back to that top 10 level at least maybe by the end of the year. But I saw some quarterback rankings recently, and I think he was like the last or one of the bottom.
They don't even include him. Oh, okay. So CBS Sports include him in tier 6. The writer came back because I wrote an article justifying it this year, but it was not a case where he's the same caliber of quarterback, but he was in a tier of quarterbacks where you're like, I just don't know this year because you don't know when he's going to come back
right. And
you don't know if he's going to. So, and I said, I kind of wrote it, I framed it at he's a tier 3 guy in a tier 6 situation this year. And the writer actually hit me on Twitter. He's like, thank you for the context. He's the top of tier 3 if it's any other year, but right. just because of the uncertainty, it's not about talent, it's about the situation this year. But like the other ones, like Doug Farrar, when he did our touchdown wire ones, they don't even include yeah. Kyler. They put Colt McCoy in there as the starting quarterbacks. And of course comes in number 30, and the only ones he's ahead of include Desmond Ritter.
Yeah, it's funny, that tier thing, I had a lot of fans pretty upset about that as well, but it's like, you know, if you really did read what he was saying, he was just saying more so that just don't know what to expect. He's not
right
saying,
and like, the same thing with Ritter's you're like, yeah, you saw you a little bit, but you don't know yeah, like, we don't know anything about him,
honestly. Yeah, I some of the fans, I get frustrated because it's like, I don't want them to be, you know, I don't want them to, they're always saying this is so much disrespect, and it's like, yeah, I get it, but you know, he hasn't done anything yet. Let's let him do it, let's let him play before we can, you know, say he's getting disrespected right now. So I understand why he's that low.
I did like Ritter coming out of college because the production he had, and he's much more athletic than anyone. Like, you knew he was athletic, but he's very athletic.
Yeah, I didn't know he ran like a 4.39 or something. It was pretty good 40 time too.
It was. He moved really well. He produced in college. He has a really good arm. It's just a matter of like, is he just going to be mistake avoidant where he plays and just is. Like on schedule good, or can he be off schedule good as well? That's kind of the difference. Like even Colt McCoy is on schedule good, and that's right. What's kept him in the league for 13 years. But anything off schedule, he turns into a mess, like most average to below average quarterbacks.
Yeah, I think that's great. Honestly, like I wouldn't want to disrespect Ritter, but I kind of feel like I'm almost seeing Colt McCoy would be like a good comparison to what I think he could be this year. Like, you know, if he's just, you know, just competent, Colt McCoy playing well. For him, I guess that's kind of like what I see Ritter as this year. Like maybe just manage the game, do what's asked of him. You know, don't make any extra plays, but just don't turn the ball over. I think that's kind of how they're going to play. But yeah, beyond that, can it be more than that? I'm not sure at this point. And I think anyone that thinks so is kind of, you know, just projecting or hoping at this point. No.
You can obviously find Matt Urban's work over at the Falcons Wire, one of the sister sites on the USA Today NFL Wire. Matt, is there any other way, any other work that you do that we can find you at? Are you on social media? Are you on Threads yet? I'm on Threads. I haven't literally posted nothing because I'm not going to actually migrate there until Twitter's dead.
Right. Yeah, I'm thinking of doing the same thing. I haven't gotten to Threads yet, but yeah, I'm still on Twitter, at Matt Urban. Don't tweet a whole lot on there, but other than that, no, I just you can see me in Sports Weekly sometimes, like you as well. But yeah, other than that, not really much else going on, just doing the Falcons Wire thing.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining us on the show again this year, Matt. That's Matt Urban. This is the Rise Up Seaward podcast. That'll wrap up this episode. We will be back again soon with one of our opponent preview shows, or if this is the last one that we release, then soon thereafter, Seth will be back with me for the next show. Thanks for listening. As always, go Cardinals.
Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up Seaward podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up, Sea Red.